Hey, Geekscapists, welcome to a brand new Geekscape podcast. I'm Jonathan Linden, your host. If this is your first Geekscape, we like to talk movies, video games, comic books, all the pop culture goodness that is pretty popular right now. And I've got a great episode for you today. I like to talk to filmmakers, and these two I can't wait to talk to. We've got Eric Nelson and Jewel Palovic on the show. I don't even know if I've pronounced those names correctly, but you may know them. They were the producers of Werner Herzog's Grizzly Man. That was a documentary that came out, I think, 2006. Correct me if I'm wrong on that IMDb sleuthing, Geekscapist. But in 2006, this was a documentary that was Werner Herzog. Again, like, it's been a while since I saw the movie, but he had Timothy Treadwell's tapes, and Timothy Treadwell was a bit of a naturalist and a documentarian, phenomenal photographer, and he went out and lived with the grizzlies in Alaska to document them, and it led to his death 13 years later. He lived with them from about 1990 to 2003, and now Eric and Jewel have taken the footage that Timothy has shot, that he shot over the period of 13 years, along with his diary entries and some of his photographs, and put together this series that's coming out tomorrow on VOD. It's called The Diary of the Grizzly Man. The Grizzly Man. And we're going to talk to them here in a bit. This is Geekscape. We're free on all podcasting platforms, as well as Facebook, YouTube, and Twitch. We love that you're here. Go ahead and write a nice review for us and hit a share button, share it with your friends, whatever you want to do, because you're a part of this too. Geekscape is the chat room is open, and let's get it started. Hey, Geekscapists, welcome to a brand new Geekscape podcast, and let's get it going. We've got The Diary of the Grizzly Man producers Eric Nelson and Jewel Palovic on the show. They're waiting in the wings, but I do want to remind you all to share the episode. Tell your friends, hey, the chat room's open. Let's get them going. Let's talk about this. Also, want to let you know, I'm thinking about editing some video for the theme song. I have so much Geekscape footage from the last 15 years that I think I can make a cool little video for that intro. So you're not just looking at the logo. If that's something you're interested in, you think I should bother with, go ahead and let me know. And then as soon as I set my sights on that, Steve Sabosley, who wrote that theme song, is like, we should get you a new theme song. So I don't know. Do you want a new theme song? Should I edit video for that theme song? Let me know, especially if you're a video viewer. If you're a podcast listener, you're none the wiser. Maybe you're tired of the theme song. Want me to have a new one? Please, your opinion's important to us here on Geekscape. It always has been. Real quick, before I bring in Eric and Jewel, I want to eulogize a couple of people who've lost that we've lost. It's early 2022. I'm recording this on the 10th, and already we've lost a few people. Sydney Poitier, if y'all remember our short film that we made, Chasing Fletcher Allen, we actually had Sydney Poitier's cousin Damien Poitier acting in that film with us. You may know him, Avengers fans, as Joss Whedon's Thanos. He did the mocap for Thanos in those scenes that Joss Whedon did in the Avengers films, and that was Damien Poitier. And it turns out his cousin was Sydney Poitier, and he eulogized him very, very beautifully on his Instagram. So please look for Damien's Instagram, and he said some really beautiful things about his relationship with Sydney and how he realized that that he was his cousin. And how it really helped his pursuit of acting. That's a beautiful one. We also lost Bob Saget suddenly yesterday. And Bob Saget, I'm not going to be the person who's like, hey, I have a Bob Saget story. The only time I ever met Bob Saget was he and I were waiting in the lobby at Fox maybe 15 years ago. And I was going in to meet with Gabe Marano, who's back at Fox now and doing really well. And Dave Madden, who... his name popped up on a series I was watching the other day, but Dave Madden ran Fox Television Studios for a long time. And as I'm sitting there waiting nervously for a pitch meeting, right over there in another chair is Bob Saget, also nervously waiting for a pitch meeting. And I'm like, hey, how you doing? Because you're the only people in the lobby and you say hi, you say hi. What's your story? Hey, what's your idea? And you kind of use the other person as maybe a warm up. But I just remember him being very incredibly kind and supportive in the 15 minutes that we had a little conversation about what our projects were, with our fingers crossed that maybe the big studio would have value in it. But what I hear from a lot of people is it just echoes that he was very kind and very supportive. And so rest in peace, Bob Saget. The other one that happened that is a little closer to home has to do with when I first moved to Los Angeles. And that is Peter Bogdanovich. Now, I don't talk about it too much on the show, but Peter Bogdanovich, if you're not aware, he is a director. You may know him from The Sopranos. He was an actor in The Sopranos. But Peter, he directed The Last Picture Show, and he started out as a writer. And he would write about Orson Welles. He was actually like the big expert on Orson Welles as a young person, as somebody like late teens, early 20s, and to the point where he was the authority on Orson Welles. He got to know Orson Welles. If they had a retrospective on Orson Welles, he'd be the person to do the Q&A. And he developed this relationship with Orson Welles. And after a while, by the late 60s, he was directing. And fast forward to late 2003, I think it was it would have been fall 2003. I'm just moved fresh to Los Angeles, and I'm a delivery person for a TV company here in the Valley called Von Zernick Certner. I'm delivering packages for them. I'm working in post, so I'm delivering like beta tapes and things like that and DVDs. There was no streaming, no, hey, put the cut online and we'll watch it and give notes. No, I had to like drop stuff off at executives' houses. And Peter came in to finish a TV movie on Natalie Wood. And he wanted, so I started driving him and pick him up at the hotel, drive him to his meetings, drive him to the post house, drive him to the editing sessions, the audio recording sessions, all that stuff. And he never talked to me. The most Peter would tell me is to, hey, slow down. And he would sit next to me with his signature ascot, and he would eat almonds and apples and make phone calls. And every now and then he'd be like, could you slow down? And I'd have to slow down coming over the 405 to Mulholland and that kind of thing. And I just wanted him to talk to me. As somebody who was finishing up film school, you still have this idea that your career is going to turn on a dime when you're going to meet somebody who can open doors for you. And I thought that was Peter, right? Like you have this idea that your career isn't going to be the thing that you have to champion yourself and put together through a million different fights and struggles. And that ultimately you learn that you're the champion of your career in whatever field you're in, and that there really isn't that person that is going to be able to just open the doors for you. That's got to be you. And that whole week I'm sitting here thinking, I remember that this one week, and I'm sitting here thinking like, Peter's going to like start talking to me. He's going to realize that I have some creative genius, and he's going to make phone calls, and here's the red carpet rolling out for my film career. Nope. He didn't talk to me. He'd tell me to slow down. And he was always on his phone trying to do what we're doing as creatives, and what I'm sure Eric and Jewel, who are going to join us on the show, do. You want to tell stories, and you've got to constantly be pushing for those stories and championing them. And that's what Peter was doing right next to me every day that I was driving him around Los Angeles. And one day he was not on the phone. One moment, really. We're sitting at a stoplight on Ventura, and Peter's not on the phone. Suddenly, he's just sitting there waiting for the light, looking out at Ventura Boulevard. And he goes, so Jonathan, they tell me you're a director. And I was like, I mean, by that point, I was like, at that point, I kind of didn't like him. I thought he was rude. I thought he treated me like a chauffeur, not a person. And finally, he's talking to me, and all that went away. I was like, oh, yeah, yes, sir. Yes, I'm a director. And oh, you have a short film? I do. It's in festivals now. Did you write it? I did. I wrote the film. Oh, my God. He's going to ask to see it. He's going to love it. It's going to open up all those doors I thought about. The red carpet's going to roll out. Oh, very cool. Very cool. Do you know who Orson Welles is? Oh, yeah, Orson Welles. Oh, my God. Yeah, absolutely. Of course. And I start talking. Oh, I heard that The Magnificent Ambersons would have been better than Citizen Kane if he hadn't been, he was my roommate. Oh my God. Peter Bogdanovich is going to tell me some Orson Welles story that is going to ninja Jedi mind trick my brain into being like the next stage of directing genius. And here it comes. Here it comes. So absolutely, I know who Orson Welles is. I'm so nervous. I start rolling out the Orson Welles trivia. And he goes, yeah, that's right. There was a month where he got so addicted to KFC that he would just walk around naked with a bucket. I could still smell it. What? That was his nugget of... I couldn't believe that that's what Peter Bogdanovich just said to me. And I turned to him, and he is staring out the window at a KFC on the corner. Like he's shooting, like he wants to throw a Molotov through the windows. And I'm about to be like, are you effing kidding me? Like, I've been driving you around and like you've been throwing almonds and like apple cores on the ground of my car. I've been vacuuming them up every night. And that's what you say to me. His phone rang and he picked it up. And I barely talked to Peter ever again. So that's really my Peter Bogdanovich story is, if I'm going to take a positive from it, and there's lots of positives to take from it, is that, even as somebody who had an established career, he was always championing himself and pushing himself, and his work ethic was something that I was able to witness, and I'm grateful for that. The Orson Welles story, that one was tough. Well, that's Peter, and rest in peace. But we've got two filmmakers here waiting to join the show, so let's invite them. Here's Eric Nelson, if you're ready, Eric, and Jewel Palavac. And I want to know, Jewel, first off, am I pronouncing your name correctly?
Yes, Jewel Palavac. You got it.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you. Thank you. And what if you just told me Orson Welles stories about eating KFC, walking around with a bucket of chicken for an entire month?
Would you like me to do that?
No. And I didn't want Peter to do it then either. Like, you idolize people when you enter this industry, and you idolize these people, and then if there's a lesson to be taken from it, it's his work ethic and the fact that he's incredibly human too.
Yep, and it's also interesting. I mean, at least it's kind of better than slow down.
Yeah, he did not like. I'm kind of a really slow driver. I'm kind of a safety. My older brother was killed in a car accident. Like, I'm really paranoid of driving sometimes. And I was actually kind of like shocked that he was like, slow down. I was like, all right, well, sorry. How are you doing, Eric?
I'm doing good. And quick before I forget, keep the audio, add the video to your open.
Okay. Keep the audio, add the video. Yeah, I think I should cut something together. It's just a matter of editing and finding the time to edit something together.
The song's great. I'd leave. Yeah, just keep the audio, add the video.
Thank you so much, Eric. Eric, you both have a pretty extensive IMDb of documentary filmmaking. Eric, especially, you're still working very actively in creating some of these TV shows that we love watching. A lot of the you've worked with National Geographic. There's a ton of documentary experience that you've got going back well before Grizzly Man. I mean, we're talking into the mid-90s. Is documentary always something that y'all were interested in? And talk about your partnership as well, and then we'll talk about Diary of the Grizzly Man. But how did y'all find each other?
Okay, well, Grizzly Man, I moved from television, started moving from television to feature documentaries with, wait for it, Grizzly Man in 2004, so I think when we did Grizzly Man. And I reached out to Jewel on behalf of a TV show. I thought that this would be a good television show. And Jewel was quite insistent that the material demanded more than an hour discovery special. It demanded a feature project. Mm. And on a parallel track, I had met Herzog at a film festival, Jackson Hole Film Festival. And our office was right. My production company's office was on Ventura, not too far from where Werner lived up Laurel Canyon. So I invited him down just to avail himself of our facility. So he was kind of in our office. And at some point, the idea occurred to me to fuse Jewel's desire for a feature documentary with Werner's hanging around in our office. And I got the material to Werner, and he wanted to direct the documentary, which I, in fact, was going to direct whatever this project was. But when someone like Werner Herzog says, hey, I'd like to do this, resistance is futile. And the adventure began, and we filmed Grizzly Man Labor Day, started Labor Day, September of 2004, delivered a cut to Sundance mid-October, finished the film in December, and premiered it at the Sundance in January. So the whole thing came together very, very quickly.
Wow.
And I met Jewel through this process, because Jewel was and remains in Timothy's posthumous partner. So anything in regards to Timothy Treadwell and the estate goes through Jewel, because they were partners in life and partners in death. Jewel, you can illuminate, I'm sure, more of that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I had been approached by many, many different facets to make a documentary, TV, film, all kinds of different things. And I know that, I mean, I knew of Werner Herzog. I'd seen some of his movies, some, you know, like everybody had. But when I thought about Timothy, God, the director's name escapes me right now, but the film is Burden of Dreams. Is it Les?
Les Blank.
Les Blank.
Which is the making of Fitzcarraldo.
Yeah, that's the making of Fitzcarraldo.
And that's the story of like having to pull a boat over a mountain. Exactly.
Exactly.
Geekscape has looked that story up, but it was almost a mutiny on set for the most part. Am I wrong?
Not necessarily a mutiny. It was just an insane thing. And Werner, you know, persisted, as they would say.
Yeah.
But when after I had seen that, I thought, you know, this will give me a whole different kind of documentary that's not really in the eco world, but it's also something. Timothy was a huge film buff. He loved movies. He loved TV. And I think that I chose Werner because, A, like Eric said, how do you say no to something like that? And also because I really felt like from the documentary I'd seen about the making of Fitzcarraldo that Werner and Timothy were kind of like kindred spirits, like never someone who's never going to give up, someone who's going to figure out a way to do something, someone who's very charismatic. I just thought, you know what, this will be a movie Timothy would want to watch. Let's put it that way. And that was, that's how it came together. But Eric was the mastermind between trying to put us together and getting us together and making it possible for us to go out and film and get what we did.
And Jewel, what was the process of compiling all of this footage? And really, like, how did you meet Timothy? And because when I posted about the episode, and I'm really excited to have y'all here, I feel like posthumously that like Timothy's death was what people remember. It's like, oh, this is the guy who lived amongst grizzlies and they ate him. Like, what did you expect? And watching these three episodes of your series, which comes out this week, Geekscapist, Diaries of the Grizzly Man, I feel really showed a lot more about Timothy in that I almost got like a Steve Irwin vibe about him. Like, he really celebrated these animals. He really loved his life. He really loved being there. There's one point where he said, hey, back in the city, I've got a nice apartment. I can ride my motorcycle, but out here is where I feel alive and with these animals that I would die for. And in watching 3 hours of Timothy's almost completely uncut tapes, like y'all did a really good job of not adding too much to them, right? Like you let them speak for themselves. I think these 3 hours gave me a better representation, a cleaner representation than what we were building towards in the 2 hour Grizzly Man. And that is its own thing. This is
correct.
This is a third. This is a different thing.
Well, Grizzly Man is really the making of the Grizzly Man Diaries in some ways. It's Werner Herzog's take on what Treadwell was doing out there. And it's a film where it's a debate between Treadwell's concept of nature and Herzog's dystopian kind of nature. So it's a conversation and a making of and a biofilm. And the Grizzly Man Diaries is Timothy, the film he was trying to make to the best that we could put it together. And I'm glad it seems unmediated and seems raw, but in fact, it took an awful lot of time to cull through 100 hours of footage and kind of let the stories speak for themselves without any editorial intrusion, just sort of gentle, you know, gentle guidance. And they sort of exist on a parallel track. They inform one another, I would say. I think Grizzly Man, you know, it's a great double bill, but either one would stand alone too.
Yeah. And Jewel, was it, I mean, how did you meet Timothy first off? I'm jumping ahead of myself.
Oh, Timothy and I haven't seen Grizzly Man in so long. I think it's in there about, we worked together at a restaurant. Mm-hmm. We're together at a restaurant and we all had, it was called Gulliver's and it was a prime rib house. And it was kind of ridiculous. I mean, I was dressed as an English serving wench and he was dressed as a squire. Those were the male and female things. And we both had gotten in trouble. I can't remember what I got in trouble for lighting the soup cart on fire. And
he got what?
I didn't mean to. You know, it was a restaurant where you did tableside service. So we had like a soup every night and someone had spilled some, I guess it's like a sterno on the tablecloth. And I was, you know, using a lot of bravado to make it everyone's best experience eating soup. And I accidentally lit the cart on fire because there was sterno on the cart. So I lit the cart on fire. So they thought maybe I did it on purpose. And then Timmy was kind of like in the hall monitor, you know, in the principal's office too for walking funny in the dining room, a la Monty Python. You know, when it's slow, what is it? The Ministry of Silly Walks.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was that. And then we just developed a friendship from there. We dated for a while. We lived together for a while. And then when we broke up and realized, you know, we weren't like meant to be that way, we started a little bit of a nonprofit called Grizzly People. And we got Timothy started, you know, he had drank a lot when I knew him and I first met him. And then he kind of had an epiphany on one of his first road trips up and going up to Alaska. And he decided he wasn't going to drink anymore. And he really, really every year his things got longer. Like his missions got longer. Like he would be able to take enough time off to go for a couple of weeks. And then he would, you know, take a bunch of photos. And then he met somebody who had a connection at Minolta. And Minolta started lending us for the season better and better equipment. So he was able to start taking, and it sort of just, it took off from there. You know, it started as two friends and it ended as two awesome friends.
Yeah. And his photography is something that I also don't recall in Grizzly Man as being celebrated to the extent that y'all do. And if I have anything, I would love to have seen more in the Grizzly in Diaries of the Grizzly Man. It's, these photos are phenomenal.
And his photography, which we didn't really tap into in Grizzly Man, this was a real showcase for that because it was a better, obviously 35 millimeter. We were able to show it in high resolution. So the image is just ravishing. And you have to get that close to take these pictures without a telephoto lens. It's not anything you've ever seen before.
Yeah, these were without a telephoto lens. And when you watch the Diaries of the Grizzly Man, Geekscape is just realize that these relationships that he had built with, I mean, the foxes in these three episodes are really co-stars. And they're like his supporting cast through at least the first two episodes quite a bit. And it took him a while to develop a relationship to where at one point, one of them seems to come to him for help. Especially when the wolves appear, and I don't want to spoil too much, Geekscape, as you'll have to watch these episodes, but when, you know, these are wild animals that are living amongst other wild animals, and Timothy, in being human and being there, is one of the, he almost enters as a bit of an alpha animal as well, or at least that's how they view him, and there's a point where the foxes are waiting for him on a riverbank, or they come to him for help when another predator enters their habitat. And he looked at them as family. Jewel, as you started to see how your company was progressing, and as each summer, Timothy was continuing to be out there further, longer and longer periods, where were you on that journey?
I was kind of in the background. I mean, when we first started, we had, I mean, like fax machines were kind of new technology, sure. You know? So I was kind of in the background, just making sure that all, you know, that he had everything that he needed.
And for educational purposes or to
for
try
educational and, purposes yeah. and to be able to gather his stuff. I mean, he had a bug in his lens once and like a physical bug. So I, you know, called Minolta and they schooled me on, you know, well, there's no bugs in our lenses. They're tight. They're state of the art and everything. And I said, no, there's actually bugs in there, you know, like real bugs. So, you know, and I, you know, if something would happen, he'd need supplies dropped to him. And or he'd need, you know, there would be letters of support that would be written, you know, when he did work. I mean, Grizzly Man had some hardcore stuff with the Park Service, but for most of his time, he really did have a great relationship with them. But I was, like I said, kind of behind the scenes. We finally ended up getting a satellite phone, so that made life a little more easy. And I, you know, it was kind of, at first I thought, wow, you know, it would be kind of fun to go and see this, but even though I knew exactly what to do in theory around a big animal like that, I never really trusted myself, you know, not to turn and run. And sure. So, you know, when we filmed Grizzly Man, I realized, okay, I didn't turn and run. I was good. But, you know, I mean, he would send me miniature, you know, like audio tapes, little cassette tapes. And he'd be like, you know, I've been wet for 3 weeks. My side of my face is swollen up because of some kind of spider bit me. The flies are terrible. And, you know, I love a good wilderness adventure, but I sure do like that hotel at the end of the day. So I stayed in the background happily.
And that's where you are physically as his friend and as his you know, as the person who's working with him to get these educational materials out. And really your purpose was education about the wildlife. There's a big anti-poaching message in parts of these episodes. Mm-hmm. There's a preservation naturalism aspect to all this. As his friend, watching him go out there for longer and longer periods of time, where were you on that journey? Where were you in at any point were you saying, okay, like Timothy, I think we got what we needed and maybe let's press the pavement a little bit more with all the materials and see what we can do through the bureaucracy of you know, preservation and the Park Service on this end?
You know, I think, you know, we started reaching more and more children and people every year, but I think it's not that he was very well aware of the fact that, you know, he was in a dangerous spot. And he also, although the man never wanted to admit it, you know, everybody's getting older and how long can you really be out there? You know, how long can you really be able to get all of the footage? So I think that, you know, he definitely wanted to keep going and going with as much as he could and stockpile as much as he could. And also, you know, like I mentioned that he had been an alcoholic and he had drank a lot and had trouble. And good or bad, he was an adrenaline junkie at the end of the day. And this really fueled maybe, if you want to call them demons, if you want to call them, you know, addiction. He became a little bit addicted to his life among the bears and thought that, you know, he could definitely end up doing more good with the more footage and the more photos that he garnered.
Mm-hmm. And Eric, how do you even begin to take 13 years of material with Jules' guidance? And I don't know what the process was of cataloging each of its all this stuff every winter, every year. What's the process of putting this together and forming a different narrative than Grizzly Man? Because Grizzly Man has had such an impact. Like, you're now doing this without Werner and you're making it kind of, as producers, your film or your series, trying to echo what Timothy would do as a director. Working with multiple ghosts, the ghosts of the Grizzly Man film, the ghosts of Timothy, as a storyteller, how do you two go about putting together these three episodes? Because it would seem like those would always be present. No,
well, Grizzly Man was a very collaborative process. So what informed Grizzly Man also informed the Grizzly Man Diaries. And Werner was very clear when we started Grizzly Man. He didn't care for beautiful nature. He did not want to see nature or cute animal stories. He wanted to see Treadwell. He wanted to see Treadwell, you know, in extremis, if you will. So when we logged the material for Grizzly Man, we gave Werner, out of the 100 hours or so, we had a team of people going through the footage who boiled down the 100 hours to about 10 hours of material that emphasized more Treadwell's journey and Treadwell being Treadwell.
Man versus nature.
Yeah. But and that became Grizzly Man, and everyone was completely on board with that. And then, but always in the back of our mind, we knew there was all these other stories that were incredible that we had flagged that weren't in the film. So we did, a few years after Grizzly Man, we call it a rough cut of this program for Animal Planet, where we went and did a seven half hour series that came and went in a nanosecond.
The Grizzly Man Diaries
that incorporated a lot of the same footage. And then that went out in 2008, and always in the back of my mind, I wanted to put it in its true form, which was either theatrical or, you know, longer form. And what kind of motivated this latest project was my work. I've done a couple of films revolving on restored footage, a documentary called The Cold Blue that took William Wyler's Memphis Belle footage from World War II and restored it to widescreen and created a new film out of it. And I finished the film
recently.
Yes, a couple of years ago. And then even more recently, I did a film called Apocalypse 45, which did a restoration, massive restoration on war footage shot during the Pacific War. But in the process of doing that, we invested heavily in restoration equipment, not unlike the restoration equivalent that Peter Jackson just used in The Beatles, which took 16 millimeter 3x4 footage, cleaned it up, and brought it to widescreen.
And those we've talked about them on the show, Geekscape, because I think y'all saw me take a bunch of 16 millimeter and put it to digital in the last 6-7 years. Those gauges were all disappearing from Los Angeles. Like, nobody was doing film anymore, so they didn't need film gauges to scan stuff into digital.
But what we did is we took the footage, the 3x4 footage, and brought it and restored it, made Treadwell's material look exquisite on the big screen. Yeah. And that's that. So, and that plus the restored, you know, you don't have to do much with 35 millimeter pristine photography to go directly from the raw, you know, from that to 4K, you're going to have a real great scenic property. So it's a convoluted way of saying is, you know, that what Grizzly Man told the story it needed to tell, and the Grizzly Man, this new project, tells the story it needs to tell. And I say it's, again, on a parallel track. I don't think there's a single repeated shot in the 3 hours of the Diary of the Grizzly Man to Grizzly Man, not one. So everything, and that's how vast the archive is. But I would say, Jill, you probably would agree with me. We use the good stuff. You know, it's not like we would have made this 4 hours, but we did not, again, unlike what Jackson just did through in Get Back. There's 50 hours of footage. Rest assured, Jackson did the 8-hour cut. You know, he knows what was good, and the stuff that isn't in Get Back is probably not worth seeing. So, and it's the answer of how do you do that? You just do it. You know, the film presents itself, and you tell the stories you need to tell. Writing the cards, you know, writing the transitional things, that's almost the toughest part, because, you know, it's D.W. Griffith time. You want to do title cards that are very informative but very brief and don't interrupt the flow of the story. So ironically, that takes a lot of time and precision effort, if you will.
You didn't want to impose yourself on Timothy's movie.
No. And what makes Grizzly Man the feature work so well is that the film revolves around Werner's imposition. There would not be a Grizzly Man without Werner's presence and narrative drive and point of view, and that's as may be, but we felt, and Werner felt too, Ted Treadwell, and he says it in Grizzly Man, Werner recognized a great filmmaker in Timothy Treadwell, and he says so in the film. He may have had disagreements about Treadwell's perceptions of nature, but he never ever didn't acknowledge Treadwell's prowess as a filmmaker. So in a strange way, again, Grizzly Man sort of sets up Diary of the Grizzly Man very well. Thank you, Werner.
And his filmmaking's really pretty good in this Geekscape. We've talked about his photography, and the photography is beautiful. And I don't know if that's something, Jewel, that would be pursued in the future, is a book or any kind of show or anything.
It's our subject on the book.
Oh, I'm really Werner's, sorry about that. I'm really
Werner's,
sorry about that.
Werner's brilliant wife, Lena Herzog, who's a fantastic photographer. She collaborated with us in 2010 on a Taschen-like coffee table book of all of Treadwell's photography. And we just could not get a publisher interested. It was a magnificent book. Nope, could not get anyone interested. We tried.
It was kind of that transition from, I think, you know, it was awesome, but it wasn't the time for a coffee table book. They were starting to fall a little bit, at least that's what they told us, kind of out of popularity.
Yeah, and believe me, I'm pretty good at getting things going. And even with the backspin from Grizzly Man and its reputation and its ubiquity in the world, I could not get the book done. But I will say that a lot of the energy and the selection of Treadwell stills that went into that book, the very, very best stills in that book are now in the Diary of the Grizzly Man. So
it just seems like Geekscape is, we're here in 2022 and we're watching the Grizzly Man, the Diaries of the Grizzly Man. And I, the whole time I'm watching this, I said, if this guy had a Snapchat, a TikTok, an Instagram, yes, like we're talking 3 million followers. Like this guy has access to these animals and has an eye for these animals, for this videography and photography to just be on another level. Like, how does this guy not have 10 million followers if this is 2020?
Well, but I would say, Jill, wouldn't you agree if Timothy were going live and unmediated, the park would have kicked him out in about 10 minutes.
True. Yeah.
You know,
oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's definitely a thing he had to just be, but you know, I mean, I do have it. I have a little photo store on Etsy, which of course was needing a little bit of rejiggering since it had been on hold for a little bit. So I could, it's Treadwell Photos on Etsy, but right now it doesn't have a lot on it. But I mean, I'm ready. I've a few times had somebody that was super interested, or you know, was gonna do some funding or open some doors, and it just really never happened. And I'm hoping that it does. I know that I think sort of too, when we were starting to do it, everyone's phones were getting really good. And before, you know, a lot of people could start taking their own stuff, you know, not that they were up there with Treadwell, but I think that's part of what I think happened as well, is that people were more interested in the things that they could get at the actual exact time. So maybe it is time for a bit of a resurgence on something like that.
Well, I think conservancy is something that's going to start really coming into the conversation as our world continues to erode.
Well,
and I think people are going to start talking about how do we conserve this, because we're running out of land here and we're running out of the ability to share spaces. Yes. I have a friend named Beth who was part of this land bridge project in Agora Hills. It's a multi-million dollar project to put an overpass over the 101 freeway
for the wildlife. Yes,
for the wildlife to cover. And I met her when she was speaking about P22, which is a mountain lion that lives here in Griffith Park, and he's one of my running buddies. But
and just seen in Brentwood, by the way. P22 is just spotted on a security cam in Brentwood. He's alive and in people's backyards as we speak.
I think people watch this stuff, and the instant judgment of Timothy Treadwell is, oh, he's crazy for being out there, or who would in their right mind be out there doing this? I think we're going to see ourselves, if you're listening to this or watching, I think we're going to start seeing ourselves being forced to cohabitate with nature, or we're going to lose it. And when that block starts falling out, we're next, right? Like when that scale tips, we're the next thing that tips. And so I think we've got to find some fluidity here. And
well, there's an interesting parallel between Grizzly Man and Diary and Cave of Forgotten Dreams, which was a film I produced a few years after Grizzly Man. And we got access to the Chevet Caves, the pristine caves that no one is allowed in France. And Werner filmed it in 3D and covered it and did his own film. And the thing about that, I've just taken all of that footage and reconverted it and made it look even better, all the raw footage inside the cave. No one's ever going to get back to get that access again, ever. Mm-hmm. And I've backed it up and preserved it. And in much the same way, no one is ever going to come that close to bears again. And in Katmai Forest, with that equipment, in that environment, with that kind of personality of Timothy Treadwell and that dedication. So the material he got is, we may go back to the moon again, and if Elon Musk gets on the case, we probably will. But I don't think you're going to get footage like that or still photography like that of those animals ever again, which again was one of our imperatives to do this project, was to get a showcase for it. So it's all there. You can go to Apple starting tomorrow. You can go to Amazon Prime and watch it and see it and live in it and immerse yourself in it. And it's always going to be there. And it's as good as we can make it quality wise. And I felt personally that we owed it to Treadwell. He gave his life to capture this material, and it needed to be preserved and upgraded and put in a showcase. It really was, you probably know this, you know, there's not a lot of money in anything these days, but it's important to have it out there, and good work will find its way. And I felt we owed, Jewel and I both profited in a lot of ways, you know, from Grizzly Man, but we felt this was left on the table, and this was what Timothy and his work deserved. And as you say, is a message for conservation. It makes without us saying a statement, author's message, blink, 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 this is the point of this. I think anyone gets the point across about the uniqueness and the sublime nature of what Treadwell was encountering up there. And they're still up there, God forbid, global warming permitting and any Sarah Palin inspired pipeline plans go.
Hunting from helicopters like this. I mean, there's some psycho stuff.
That's pretty gross.
It's on another level of grossness. And you do see some of that. Geekscapists, in this series, you'll see Timothy witness the encroachment of nature or of man on this habitat. You actually see him come across a possible poacher's campground where, I mean, you know, after they'd exited it, and you can tell that this breaks his heart. This goes back to the very beginning of documentary filmmaking. I mean, this is Nanook of the North, the preservation of the disappearance of the natural world. Except unlike Nanook of the North, like Timothy's
no
not
staging.
We didn't, no
reenactments here.
No half igloos, no wait for me to get on the other side of the hill for you to come back on the other side. Like there's no staging here.
No, there isn't.
And if there was any staging or there was any artifice, that's what was in Grizzly Man. And there wasn't, but had there been, we would have, because again, Grizzly Man's the making of, you know, how careful he was for his camera placement. He would do multiple takes. You know, Grizzly Man showed all of that making of process, and it vouches for Timothy's integrity. You know, he may have done multiple takes of his quote stand-ups, but he didn't fake, you know, when the camera is right up the muzzle of a bear, that is not a reenactment.
Yeah. And there's one wonderful part where he's trying to get a fox to behave so that he can get the take. And that's amusing. There's one part where he actually is being harassed by part of the wildlife. And I find it hilarious and amusing because,
the weasels
scene. Yeah. I don't want to spoil too much for the Geekscapists because there are some really great narratives there. There's a beautiful narrative about a mother bear in episode 2, I believe, a mother bear and her 3 cubs. And just, I mean, when Timothy says that 60% of these animals, these grizzlies don't make it past the second year, third year, and that's just in nature. When you just see when one of these animals get injured, the alpha animals come out and they see that animal as a source of protein now, even though it's, you know, even though you're, it's cannibalism, a bear eating another bear. If that bear is injured and you need sustenance to get you through the winter, you're going to pounce on that thing. And watching some of these relationships, summer in, summer out of these bears and how they grow is kind of something that we got in this Diary of the Grizzly Man that we don't get in Herzog's. I also feel like in Grizzly Man, Timothy shares a co-star billing with Werner. It's about what Werner's obsessed with.
It's a conversation. It's a dialogue between the two of them, two filmmakers with two opposing or not necessarily opposing, very different views of nature in a conversation back and forth. And that was very deliberately part of the structure of Grizzly Man. And that's what gives the film its power and its uniqueness, because, you know, and only Werner could have pulled that off.
In the Grizzly Man Diaries, we also, you know, we had the advantage of, you know, he was very meticulous. I mean, all of his journals were dated. Everything was handwritten. And Eric's team for Grizzly Man had done a lot of extra archiving for that. And the same with the film. So I could literally, we could literally read about something.
And then find the footage.
And then go, oh, wait. And go back and find exactly what, you know, because he would review footage at the end of, you know, after a day or a couple of days, and then he would write about it, and then he would review it. So there was definitely like a script that, as you know, that he completely wrote.
And Jill, you remind me, that's how you had asked earlier how we had put it together or why we made some of the editorial decisions, because his diaries described it. And Warren Queeney, who appears in Grizzly Man, is a character witness, if you will, for Timothy. We had him, he read, did a wonderful job reading Timothy's diaries.
And that's who you're hearing here in the
yeah,
diaries.
Yeah, Warren Queeney, yes. Warren Queeney is not just a narrator, he's an actor and a friend of Timothy. And we wanted to keep this very much in the family. So it's, if you notice, the credit roll is very, very small.
Very short.
You know, which is kind of the case for all of my films, actually. I'm not a big, we're a family enterprise here. But in this case, though, it adds, if not authenticity, it's the right thing to do. And in the back of my mind with both Grizzly Man and this new project was always, what would Timothy think? You know, are we doing his work justice? Yeah. And when it came time to do the credits, unlike Peter Jackson, who took sole credit for Get Back, even though it was completely shot by Michael Lindsay Hogg, everything was shot. And in essence, Jackson put a new cut together from his footage. We felt it important to give Treadwell the sole directing credit. It's his footage. It would be wrong for us or me or anyone connected to say, we directed this. We did not. Timothy did. He put it together. We may have made the choices in the edit room, but that's very different from being a director.
Do you think social media has entered that language or that authorship into the discourse, in that you start to see, you know, even coming from vloggers or podcasters, things like that, where it's like, oh, we're looking for that more focused voice. We have the Val Kilmer documentary where his son is doing the diary readings for his father,
right,
who is now speaking through like a vocator box. And if you haven't seen the Val Kilmer documentary, it's really beautiful.
No, it's good.
I think
I have to see it.
You know, and on the other side of that coin is our social media creating documentarians, but at the same time creating a detachment. We're not doing the show in person. We're doing it over the Zoom or the StreamYard here. Is it creating a want for more personal voices, connection, authenticity?
Stories will out. I don't think there's any trend. You know, Val Kilmer had there's three things that when I briefly worked as an executive, not making films, but buying films, there were three criteria that I would always say. We need subject, access, filmmaker. So a subject that's compelling, access to the subject, and a filmmaker can put it together. And if you apply that filter to a lot of films, like let's start with Grizzly Man, subject, unbelievable, ravishing, wild nature, access, I'm going to spend 13 years there, and filmmaker Werner Herzog. It's not too hard to, the success of Grizzly Man is not that unexplainable. So if you apply that filter to anything, you know, any form, whether it's on it's shot on an iPhone, or it's found on a YouTube channel, or it's found in a movie theater, I think the same truths apply. You know, it may reach different audiences and capture attention more in a different delivery system, but I think the actual physical product is still dictated to by those three filters, at least in the documentary world.
I think it's a really strong filter to have when you're thinking about, should I post this? Which I don't know if enough of us do.
Well, in social media, yeah, it's no, don't. Real simple. Don't.
And Joel, talking about Werner Herzog and his the relationship he developed through footage of Timothy in Grizzly Man. In Geekscape, you know Werner Herzog. He was in The Mandalorian.
Right, yeah, exactly.
If
you can buy an action figure of him now.
You can buy a Werner Herzog action figure.
Yeah.
Do you think that it dominated the discourse posthumously of Timothy, the fact that in Grizzly Man, Werner was able to have this discourse with Timothy, and then that people adopted Werner's approach to what Timothy was doing versus Timothy's approach to what Timothy was doing? Because I feel like the Diary of the Grizzly Man gives me Timothy's approach to what Timothy was doing, and in many ways celebrates his life, even when he's aware multiple times during the series that this might be what brings about its end. He is celebrating life. He is celebrating this place. He is celebrating what he's doing, and he's loving it, and he's acknowledging this might be what kills me. Do you think a lot of us have judged Timothy in the wake of Grizzly Man?
Oh, absolutely. And even before Grizzly Man, you know, when he was, you know, people would either, there was really no middle ground. It was either like, oh my God, he was like a saint and an animal whisperer and this and that, or he was a complete idiot. And, you know, he was neither. That's why I'm so proud.
Or both.
Yeah, well, perhaps right. He was both. But what always reminds me of is, like you said, this is Timothy's movie, The Diaries. And it's his day-to-day life out there. And it's still really interesting. Whereas I think, I mean, I'm very proud of Grizzly Man. It's a great film. I think Timmy would have really liked it. You know, even some of the hardcore things, I think he really would have appreciated it. But Grizzly Man is to me more like a photo, like an old school photo album where you have like, oh, here's your graduation. Look at Halloween. This is when so-and-so was born. You have all these big milestones. And, you know, some of the things, you know, they were, you know, like I said, cherry picked to maybe give him he had a pretty big personality, but to portray it as if it was constantly like that. And, you know, it wasn't. Everybody has days like that. I mean, like maybe, you know, when he's screaming at the thing about the film, the park service, maybe there's a lot of people that have had like flip outs like that, but they didn't turn a camera on themselves, you know, and it never became public. So I think that he's a more relatable person actually in the Grizzly Man Diaries, because I think you see more of what his life was like day to day rather than, oh, well, you know, today I almost fell down a mountain, or today I'm screaming at the park service, or, oh my God, I almost touched Letterman, you know, that's, is that what you mean? I think.
Yeah, no, I feel like when I posted that y'all were going to be on the show last week, I felt like I got an unfair feedback of who Timothy was. I felt like people were like, oh, that guy was an idiot. He got himself turned into sashimi or something. And I'm just sitting here being like, hey, that's a human being you're talking about. And B, did the Herzog film do enough of a job to justify why he was living this life?
I think it did.
What he was sacricising. I do too.
Yeah, I think it did.
I think there was such a focus. As you watch that film, it feels like such a slow burn at points where you're just like, hey, am I just watching this like a Faces of Death? Where I'm just like, hey, let's just watch this dude die. And it was such an acute focus.
But
on
it's
that.
all the complexities of that that make Grizzly Man the film it is. It's, you know, it's having Werner's perspective. It's the Treadwell in full flower, you know, his rants on the beach and his kind of, you know, all the weird stuff. It's the gorgeous footage that was in Grizzly Man. You know, the whole thing hangs together. And let's not forget Richard Thompson's score, the great musical score to Grizzly Man, and Richard scored The Diary of the Grizzly Man. That's the other kind of connective thing that did the same score. So that's the other DNA in this new project that it shares with Grizzly Man. But if you go to, you know, go to Grizzly Man on Amazon and read the 3,000 comments, and it's the same thing, the same debate. And a lot of it is just basic internet meanness. You know, there's a meanness in the world, as Bruce Springsteen wrote about in Nebraska. And that's always going to opt. And when someone makes a stand like Timothy Treadwell did, obviously people are going to have a strong reaction to it politically too, you know. So it's all part of the discussion. And I think I'll share with Jewel the fact, I think Grizzly Man, Diary of the Grizzly Man, the new project, is in, you know, goes in parallel and balances Grizzly Man, and then Grizzly Man balances the new project. They exist in their own universe together. And if someone watches all of it and absorbs it, then we can have, as Harlan Ellison, I did a film with Harlan Ellison, always said, you're not entitled to your opinion. You're entitled to your informed opinion. And to have an informed opinion about Timothy Treadwell and his work, you need to watch both projects and really kind of take a moment to think about it.
Well, here at Geekscapists, you know that our motto is don't hate, create. Any of that energy that you're going to put towards writing that scathing thing on the internet, and you know I've been guilty of it. You've seen it on the show. You know I've been a jerk sometimes. That's energy that you can always point towards making something like Timothy did, or like Jewel did, or Eric did, and I hope and I aspire to continue to do those things for y'all. In the spirit of what Timothy is doing, Jewel and Eric, does his work beyond the films, does his work still exist in any organizational form? Is there, are we still able to use this footage to educate kids? Is there a foundation? Is there anything that we can point the Geekscapists towards and say, well, hey, this is where, this is a resource still?
We have Grizzly People is still a viable organization. We still have 501c3 status. However, we really do need to, we're starting now to try and develop things for the modern student, you know, and realize that there's not a lot of, even the in-person learning now, there's not a lot of money out there anymore for field trips. There's not a lot of money for art. So really we have to change as an organization and put together something that's a little bit more viable for this generation. And, you know, to your point, what you were talking about with the bridge that's going over the freeway, Timmy's biggest message to students was these are public lands. They are yours in essence. And you can learn to be a good steward of your planet. So right now we're really trying to, you know, to figure out in this scope of life where there's so many humans that are hurting and so many people that have to reorganize, how to best reorganize people, you know, younger people's minds towards conservation and towards learning online. And I know Eric's footage, it's so fortunate that he was able to redo everything because it really looks great. I mean, it was filmed with such a, what was it? A Sony DCR VX1000, like the first 3-chip consumer camera. Mm-hmm. So I think now with stuff like that in hand and maybe a little more, you know, for a new generation, bringing Treadwell to the forefront, I think that Grizzly People in the next few years will be able to move on in a really positive direction.
Well, let us know here at Geekscape where we can point the eyeballs, where we can point the reading, and keep pushing that forward. Because like I said earlier, Geekscape, this is something that as we go into the next 15 years of Geekscape, I think that the conservation effort, I just spent the last weekend on Catalina Island doing a race to benefit the conservation out there in Avalon. This is something that we're all going to be really dealing with in an immediate, if you're looking at things like Katrina and these different shifting weather patterns based on the global warming, we're really going to have to start fighting this fight, people.
Well, as the great filmmaker Ed Wood said, God help us in the future where you and I will spend the rest of our lives.
Well, Eric, I got to tell you, I'm looking forward to the John Ford project that you're working on. Is it out?
It's on Discovery Plus.
I was talking about Ford at Pearl, the one where
Ford at Pearl. Ford at Pearl.
That's
Ford
what I'm looking forward to.
Ford at Pearl is on Discovery Plus, along with Terran Glory 1945 is the title of Terran Glory 1945 on Discovery Plus, and The Cold Blue is on HBO Max. So you can see that there. And obviously, most importantly for our purposes today, Diary of the Grizzly Man will be out by the time everyone catches up with us. And you can get it very easily, iTunes, Amazon. It's just go grab it, rent it, download it. But my only recommendation, put it on the biggest screen you can in the dark with a sound up. You know, it really requires that kind of immersion, I think.
And pair it with Grizzly Man.
Sure.
Eric said, get both sides of this conversation, get the whole view.
Absolutely.
Of it, get the informed conversation. We love celebrating documentaries here on Geekscapists. We had our friend Nick Scown, who just did the Comedy After 9/11 documentary on, and y'all know that we produced Doc of the Dead and other documentaries here at Geekscape. We put documentary pieces up on our YouTube channel. So this is something that we really believe in. So thank you both for being a part of it.
Pleasure.
Eric and Jewel, I had so much fun having y'all. And Geekscapists, if you have any questions, anything, send me an email, jonathan@geekscape.net. You can find us anywhere you can find Geekscape, but on the socials, just search for Geekscape, you'll find us. And please share us with our friends. Well, if they're our friends, they already know about us, but share us with your friends, because we'd like to put a little positivity and creation out there. Any last words where they can find more work?
No, I'm Jewel. I just think Grizzly People, you just find it on the web. Everyone knows where HBO Max is, Discovery Plus. Apple is ubiquitous, and it's called Diary of the Grizzly Man.
Enjoy.
Thank you both so much for being my guest. And Geekscapists, we'll see you all next week. Thank you. Don't hate, create.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.